Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmelk, David Deal with you, and the phone number is 201-939-4513, or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you want to participate in the conversation that way. Giants getting ready to play their 14th game of the regular season, three more to go in the 2017 season. They host the Philadelphia Eagles at 1 o'clock at MetLife Stadium on Sunday afternoon. And we'll get to the game in just a second, but Dave, I want to touch with you on some of the stuff that Steve Spagnuolo and the Giants players talked about at the press conference yesterday. And I guess we should start with the Eli Apple stuff. Steve Spagnuolo saying he is not in the injury report, so he's healthy. That's good news. They've worked him back into practice, but so far not with the first unit, mostly scout team stuff and special teams.
Yeah, and that's something that they'll need on that back end up against this Philadelphia Eagles offense. I mean, I understand where everybody is thinking about the change right now from Nick Foles to Carson Wentz and, you know, what's it going to do to their offense. Now, when you think about it long term, when they went out this free agency before the season and got LeGarrette Blount and then they made the trade for Jay Ajayi, you knew that they were going to capitalize on controlling the football here in December and, really relying on the ground game to take some pressure off of the quarterback, because we saw last season what it did to their football season without being able to run the football and how much more pressure was put on Carson Wentz. So we know that they're going to try to primarily run the football. They still have their receivers that are still all healthy. They have a defense that's playing well. The big thing that it's going to come up to is protection. How are they going to be able to protect Nick Foles? Because he's not that athletic quarterback that can slide in the pocket, use his legs outside of the numbers, and extend plays, especially on third and fourth down like we've seen Carson Wentz this year. So it's going to be very important for this Giants defense. If they can control first and second down, that's where they'll be able to get that those sacks and the production that they need to get on Nick Foles.
Yeah, and those run-pass options tend to slow down the pass rush, too. Now you're probably not going to use those as much with
you're not
with
really
Nick
scared
Foles
of
there.
Nick Foles Correct. Taking off and running with the football like you were with Carson Wentz. So it will definitely take a lot of the guessing out of the run-pass options that they would come into football games with. But at the same time, this is an experienced quarterback who's played a lot of football. You know, we all remember the 27-2 2013 season. And, you know, I kind of compared this switch. Granted, it's later into the season, but who would have thought Case Keenum was doing what he was doing right now? When Sam Bradford went out, he stepped in as the starting quarterback. And before the season and up until this point, Nick Foles had an actual better resume than Case Keenum going into this season. So when you think about that and you think about this Philadelphia Eagles team, it is going to be a different look, but at the same time, you have to put Nick Foles in uncomfortable situations because he hasn't started this entire season.
And here's the thing, Dave. And one of the reasons Carson Wentz has been so good this year, yes, he improved a lot. He's an excellent player. He creates something out of nothing, as Steve Spagnuolo said the other day. That's all great. But I think what people don't realize, because they maybe don't watch every snap and they see a lot of the spectacular plays on SportsCenter, it's the fact that he has the second-best running game in football, maybe the most consistent offensive line in football, numerous weapons at tight end and wide receiver. He has a ton of well-oiled moving parts that are in unison and very effective around him that have allowed him to have the success this year that he's had. And all those other pieces, and we'll see about Zach Ertz this week, they're still in place.
Not to take into account and not to not give the credit to their defense.
Oh, yeah.
Defense number one against the run. They forced 8 fumbles this season, 16 interceptions, 35 sacks on the season, which 90% of them are done by the rotation of their defensive line up front. So when you have that flexibility on the defensive side of the ball, that gives you more opportunities offensively to be more creative with it. It's just now, how is Doug Peterson going to try to harness that game plan to tailor it to the exact things that they need to do with Nick Foles that Carson Wentz provided them?
Now let's talk about the defense a little bit, and then we'll get to some of the side issues real quick. You mentioned their defensive line.
Yeah.
It is endless waves here, Dave. I mean, they have excellent players. They have 4 defensive ends that could start on most teams in the NFL with Brandon Graham, Vinnie Curry, Derek Barnett, and Chris Long. throwing Tim Jernigan and Fletcher Cox inside, both excellent players. They're going to come at you in waves. And aside from the San Diego Chargers, who the Giants played earlier in the year, this is the toughest group of pass rushers this Giants offensive line will face over the course of the year.
No question about it. And like you said, the rotation, the depth of it. You know, I always said when you're watching film or when you're watching this game at home, if you're not at the stadium, it's almost like hockey line shifts, three in, three out, two in, two out, four in, four out. And when you have that flexibility to keep guys fresh on the defensive line, it's no coincidence they've been able to have the results with Jim Schwartz's defense.
And Brandon Graham doesn't get the play like a lot of the defensive
ends do. Because he doesn't have the sexy sack numbers, but what does he do? He's constantly in the backfield. He's constantly getting pressure and hits on the quarterback, which is equal to pressure and getting a quarterback off the spot.
And I'll tell you what, he is getting some of the sacks at least this year, which is helpful for him, and he'll be at right end.
Yeah.
He'll be at left end. I saw him at three technique.
Yeah, they've put him at three technique,
which is
like
amazing.
Justin Tuck, where
right.
You put him in a sub spot.
So he'll be everywhere, and he's a heck of a player. I've seen him win one-on-one against right tackles all year long. So Chad Wheeler,
yep.
If he starts there this week, we would assume he's going to. If he's back from that concussion, he is going to have his hands full. He did practice in full yesterday, so odds are he should be back.
And we were just talking about their D-line, and then think about how the way they use Nigel Bradham. They actually essentially use him as a fifth rusher where they'll bring five guys up, they'll blitz from other plays, they'll drop him, they'll blitz him. They just have so many good players on that defensive side of the ball that when their offense produces and puts up numbers like they have this season, it allows Jim Schwartz to just let it rip.
And by the way, you forgot about Malcolm Jenkins.
Oh, yeah,
let's
forget about Malcolm Jenkins.
A pretty good safety, and so is the guy next to him, Rodney McLeod. And their corners are better. Are they the top group in the league? No. But Ronald Darby is back from that ankle injury.
Yep.
He's a very good player. Jalen Mills has come on this year. Rasul Douglas has had a promising rookie campaign. And then Patrick Robinson has been in the league in a while. He's a pretty reliable veteran. So layer to layer, the way they have rebuilt this team and the way Howie Roseman has completely overturned this roster in the period of 2 years from when Chip Kelly was here. It's really amazing. And by the way, he used trades a lot, which a lot of other GMs, I think, underutilize that as a tool to change up the players on your roster. Boy, this Eagles team, Dave, is complete, which is why I think, despite the injury to Carson Wentz and Nick Foles going into the starting lineup, they still have a chance to go to the Super Bowl. I'm not telling you they're going to beat the Patriots or the Steelers now, because I think that's a tough ask, but if they can secure home field advantage, I think they would be a favorite against any other team in the conference if they're playing at Lincoln Financial Field.
I think that they would, too. And if you look at their final stretch, obviously the game this Sunday up against the Giants, then they have Oakland, and then they play Dallas. So you're looking at a team that could legitimately be 14-2 to end the season.
Sure, absolutely. And I don't like them if they have to go into Minnesota and play.
I don't like them in,
that in
general, just the Eagles themselves.
In
but
terms of the talent, obviously. I don't like the idea of Nick Foles playing in Minnesota against the Vikings defense.
No.
I think that could go very poorly for
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely.
Because the Vikings are a much better team at home. But they're still a good football team. And this is why I think it's a problematic matchup for the Giants, Dave. The Giants have trouble protecting the passer. What do the Eagles do well? They rush
the
quarterback.
Rush
the Giants on defense have trouble giving up big plays in the secondary. What does the Eagles' theme produce?
Big plays
in the secondary. The Giants have trouble stopping the run on the perimeter. They're strong up the middle, but outside runs kill them. Where do the Eagles like to run the football?
We get Kelsey and pullers out into the perimeter.
On the perimeter.
Yeah.
So a lot of the things the Eagles do well are things the Giants have struggled with this season.
No question. And then we just talked about Jahi and of Blount. We didn't even talk about Corey Clement yet.
No.
How he comes in and is that complete opposite scat back, quick twitch, can take it inside and outside and is that dual threat of being able to catch out of the backfield. So the Giants are going to have their hands full this week. But I continue to believe that if the Giants defense can be hold them on first and second down, that's where you'll see Nick Foles struggle in the pocket because of his inescapability, and that's where he's taken those big sacks throughout his career. And offensively, they've got to make sure on first and second down they have positive gains because this is not a team that you can play behind the chains on third down
No.
and expect to get results out of it.
The Giants, with the way they're constituted, with all their injuries on the offensive line and a wide receiver, if they're 3rd-and-8 and 3rd-and-9 against this Eagles defense, they're in a lot of trouble.
Yep.
And, of course, what makes it even more difficult, Dave, is something you mentioned off the top. The Eagles have the number one rushing defense in all of football. So it's going to be hard to get ahead of those chains on first and second downs, especially with the banged-up offensive line. And you're going to have to try to get Darkwood and Gallman some room here to get into 3rd-and-5s and 3rd-and-4s. Otherwise, it could be a very long day for the offense.
It sure can. And that's where if you can get some short and intermediate passes in as an extension of the run on first and second down, it will definitely help because – The games that this offensive line, when injured, where we've seen them play well, if we go back to the Kansas City game, it's because there was balance between running and passing the football, and it allowed this group to settle down and be more aggressive instead of sitting back and being in third and longs.
And you need bigger and more consistent games out of Shepherd and Ingram in this game.
Absolutely.
They have to be effective. I mean, if each guy finishes with 6 to 7 catches for even just 50 or 60 yards, that's a successful
day.
They're putting their quarterback in good situations.
Not to mention the other thing is that we've seen how constructive – this game plan has been based upon making plays by the players in the positions right now. The ball's thrown to you. You can't have a drop in this football game.
Three bad drops last week.
And when you do that and you do it on third down, especially in a game like last week where it was tight, this can get out of hand, this game, real quickly.
The Giants are not designed to be able to overcome mistakes. When the play is available, whether it's Eli Manning making the throw properly, like he did overthrow Red Ellison on that one play down the seam last week, or if it's wide receivers dropping the football when Manning put the ball on the money, like he did to Roger Lewis, Evan Ingram, and Sterling Shepard on those drops, and then they all add up, and it'll be something the Giants have to overcome. All right, we'll get to your calls in just a second at 201-939-4513. I want to go back full circle to what I touched on at the start of the show, Dave. I thought Landon Collins and Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie over the last couple of days have said some interesting things about how they've tried to kind of reach out to Eli Apple and help him with his off-the-field stuff. And I've done probably 3 interviews on our radio network the last couple of days, and everyone asked me the same question. So I'm going to now redirect that to you because I didn't have a good answer. And it was very simple. What's the deal with Eli Apple?
What's the deal? We're bringing back in my segment. Well, obviously, you know, I think that, you know, some of this still stems from the calling out session where the plays from San Francisco and the plays from the Rams game where they reviewed them and all that stuff and where there was talks that he almost left the building twice. And then from that point forward, I understand the magnitude of your mom going through brain surgery. I understand that there are times as a professional athlete where things on the outside can be distractions from what you do in this building. But having said that, whether it's in sports, whether it's in work, whether it's in life, you channel those things to turn a negative into a positive. My first year, my rookie year here, after my first start in the preseason, I found out my father passed away. Mm. I could have easily used that as an excuse or a reason to, you know, not be as due diligent with my work or, you know, let that stuff sink in or affect the way that I practice or play. That's not what my father would have wanted, and that's not what you were meant to do as a professional and as a person in general. So when these things happen and when something happens to this, like Eli Apple, make your mom, make your family proud. Go out there and work even harder to prove that in these adverse times, you can still channel it in a way to bring out a positive in yourself. So for me, you know, we're not just like you. We're not sitting in those meeting rooms. We don't know exactly what happened. But when you're a healthy scratch, it's a problem.
And I want to go back, and again, if someone, no one's blaming Eli Apple if he misses a game because his mother's having brain surgery. No one would, you know, take anything away for the kid for that. So that's obviously more important than the game. But you go back to, for example, Marquise Goodwin on the 49ers.
Look at what he did.
I mean, he played football a day
for
after
his son.
Child passed away.
I know.
Or the morning of, I think.
Yeah,
it was,
the morning
wasn't
of,
it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, that, but you have to be able to figure out a way to, you know, work through that stuff mentally. And then I think what Landon Collins said yesterday was interesting. It's that, you know, even if you have a problem with something or somebody, you can't work against your teammates in the team.
No.
They're here to help
Hence
you.
Hence the tweets, right. Everything else during the game when mm-hmm. you're not playing. I mean, that's showing a character of who you are and that you are not thinking about the bigger picture and about your teammates. and the guys who supported you through those hard times, and the guys who practiced and pushed you to try to being the best player that you can be in that locker room and that brotherhood. And that it was, I love the fact that Landon Collins and those guys talked out like that.
Well, and you know what? He's going to have a great opportunity these final three games to get his season back on track and show this organization what he's about and that he's ready to be a really good contributor down the road, because no one doubts his talent.
No.
The kid's got speed, size, ability, and last year he showed it. He was a good player as a rookie. He just got to get back on the field and do it again.
And the thing that he has to do, it's, and you think about it, you're not really only just showing the Giants. You're showing everybody in the NFL, because every other NFL team is watching, listening. They have people paying attention to what's going on with other teams. So when these types of things happen and you have a head coach and general manager that would were fired during a season, you are either a part of that problem or you were going to be a part of the solution based upon the way that you handle yourself and you prepare and you play through this adversity. And this is an opportunity for him to prove that he deserves to be in the NFL.
I was going to go to the quarterbacks next, but that's what our first caller wants to talk about. So I'll let Joe in Pennsylvania bring up the topic. Joe, you're our leadoff hitter today. Schmelken Deal on Big Blue Kickoff Live. The phones are open, folks, so give us a call at 201-939-4513. Joe, what's going on? Hello, Joe.
Joe.
Joe going once. I hear him. Joe's there. I hear the background sound. Joe going twice, and Joe is sold. Joe, give us a call back. We'll get you right back up. All right, so I will broach the quarterback
there
subject
you
with you. Steve Spagnuolo has asked about the plan with Davis Webb. I'm sure there's an internal plan. He has not shared that with the media. Understandable. After what happened the last time they shared their internal plan with the media. So I think the way I see this is that Eli Manning is going to play this week. And we talked about this a few weeks ago off the air, Dave, where putting Davis Webb in there against this Philadelphia Eagles defense was not a recipe for success.
No.
So they seem to display the fact that he's getting a few more reps in practice, at least last week. This last week from this week, apparently it hasn't changed all that much for Webb. Do you think they're going to try to work him in into a game before the end of the year, or do you think this is going to be Eli's show from here on out?
I think that eventually they'll work him into a game to get some experience here down the stretch. And, you know, I think when we think about overall what was taking place and when this was done with, you know, the way that it was handled with Eli weeks ago and getting ready for this and moving forward now with Steve Spagnuolo, I think it's just about making sure that you get him his reps and preparation and practice and you get him active before you just throw a player into the fire to play. But I do think with three games left after this game, I think that there may be a changing at some point to where he's got to get some experience. You've got to give him a couple reps to go out there or a half to go out there and play some football and prove in these times, as difficult it is with the injuries around you, that you can direct and manage a football team, getting in and out of the huddle, doing it before the play clock. These are all important things when we're looking forward to next season.
And seeing the defense, understanding
what
you're seeing.
Being able to communicate, doing it with the offensive line. Those are things that take experience in order to do and to prove it. The only way that you can do it is by playing the games.
And you know Eli Manning better than anybody. He would not have a problem if they worked Davis Webb into one of these games.
No, as long as it was done, number one, with a game plan in the right way, and
correct,
two, that if we're winning and I'm playing well, let's roll with it.
Absolutely. All right, let's try Joe in Pennsylvania once again at 201-939-4513. Hi, Joe. Joe going once. Joe going twice. All right, put Joe back on hold. Let me see if it's a Joe problem or a phone problem. Let's go to Charlie in Portland, Maine. Charlie, can we hear you, buddy?
Yes, you can.
Yes, we can,
yes,
Charlie.
We can.
What's going on? Now, you're the guy I wish the phone didn't work.
No such luck, John.
Yeah, no such luck is right.
Hey, I threw out yesterday on BBK with Russ and Paul that I think Russ Grimm should get an opportunity to be the head coach of the New York Giants because he is an offensive-minded O-line coach. He will get tough O-linemen. He will run the darn ball, and I think he would be great. If not head coach, at least offensive coordinator. Wow. I think we should bring him in. What do you think, Mr. Deal?
Believe me, when you're talking about offensive linemen, I'm all ears listening. and I absolutely love Russ Grimm. I know him personally. I've been around him. Obviously, he's the offensive line coach right now for the Tennessee Titans. But knowing Russ Grimm, knowing him as a person, I don't see him wanting to be a head coach.
Really?
The reason why I say that is because he was part of that group of offensive linemen, and he still is part of that group. It's better to show your actions than talk about your actions. How many times do you hear or see interviews done by Russ Grimm? Not many.
Because he's only been an offensive lineman.
He's only been an offensive lineman his entire – Charlie. He's only been an offensive line coach since, 1992? And he's only been an offensive lineman his entire life?
Yeah, but he has interviewed, he has interviewed for a couple of head coaching positions. Did you know that?
Yes, I sure do know that, Charlie. I think that's part of being a professional broadcaster is that you should know those things.
Why do you think he doesn't want to be a head coach if he's interviewing to be a head coach?
What's that?
I said, why do you think he doesn't want to be a head coach when he's interviewing for a head coaching position?
Because when they do that, then they start talking about right underneath that, the coordinator position, which I was going to go into next. I could see him being an offensive coordinator. I could see him doing that and directing it in that way. I just, for me, myself personally, in regards to all that goes and all that is entailed to being a head coach, all of the media stuff, I just don't see Russ wanting to do that. I could be wrong. I haven't had this conversation with him one-on-one, but all the times that I've met him when he worked me out in 2003 when I was coming out in the draft, when I've seen him all the different times that whether we've played Pittsburgh or Washington or any of those teams, I've always had conversations with him. I just don't see him taking on that head coaching job because of all the other stuff that goes with it.
Well, David, you should try to you should talk to him and try to recruit him to come to the Giants to at least try interview for head coaching and end up with the offensive coordinator position, which I think would be wonderful because we'd get back to smash-mouth football, New York Giant way, which everybody's talking about, getting back to that, and he would actually bring in offensive linemen who can actually play. So that's my take on that.
Thank you, Charles.
Thanks, Charlie. I appreciate the call, my man.
Russ Grimm, just a heads up for everybody. In 2012, he was one of the finalists with Mike Tomlin for the Steeler head coaching job. And I think most people believe Russ Grimm was going to get that job until Mike Tomlin showed up at the interviews and just wowed
everybody.
And they decided to go with him. And then I don't know what he did. It's not on his Wikipedia page. Between 2012 and 2016, that was between his stints between the offensive line coach for the Cardinals and the offensive line coach for the Titans. I guess he just took a few years off. I don't see anything here for what he did. That was in 07, by the way, with the Steelers when he lost out the job to Tomlin. So he had a little bit of a gap there, but obviously he was with Bruce Arians, who has ties, obviously, in Arizona. So I think it would be interesting, and I think you would get back to that Northeast smash-mouth football, something the Titans did a lot better last year than they are this year.
Absolutely. I mean, Russ Grimm's favorite and most famous quote is, one of the best feelings in the world is moving a man from point A to point B against his own will. And that determines everything about smash-mouth football and being an offensive lineman.
Let's go to Joe in Pennsylvania. Joe, three strikes and you're out, buddy. You better be there this time.
Hey, the third time.
There we go.
Man.
Thank you, Joe.
Welcome, Joe.
Hey, so Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Very happy to speak to you gentlemen.
You
there.
Too, Joe.
I want to speak to David there first.
Go ahead.
He knows this offensive line, and I know Charlie ain't too happy with it, but let's start with the center. Which center would you prefer, Dave? Do you have a choice there, a signing, I forget what's his name, that's gone, and the guy that we got in there from Canada that's playing good? Which one would you preserve
you or mean Weston,
prefer
Weston,
put you on the spot or neither?
Weston Richburg or Brett Jones? I would go with Brett Jones. He's played less football. He has less injuries. In regards to the salary cap and signing a new contract, you'd have to figure out whether it's going to be Weston Richburg or Justin Pugh because both of them are not going to get it. So I'd have no problems with Brett Jones coming in 2018 and being the starting center for the New York Giants.
And he is a restricted free agent next year, by the way. So they will be able to retain him.
He's a ham and egger like you, David.
Absolutely. Nothing's been given to him.
By the way, for him, it's a Canadian bacon and egg, but that's okay.
Right, whatever. But he's in there and he's playing good and he'd be all right. Then we have the big guy from Detroit. What's his name that got hurt? You don't have no problem with him at guard, do you?
You mean Fluker you're talking about?
Yeah.
From San Diego.
San Diego. Well, yeah, Los Angeles now. Yeah,
hey,
but
he
was
in San Diego.
Yes, he was.
Okay.
He did play in San Diego. Fluker, no, that's another one. I mean, obviously, you know, this is the thing that there is going to be with the offensive line. I mean, there's going to be a lot of questions about what they're going to do moving forward here. Obviously, we know John Jerry's still under contract. Fluker was only under a one-year deal.
Does his pass protection scare you?
Yeah. Weston Richburg is underneath now, needs a new contract. So does Justin Pugh. And then figure you have at right tackle, we have to figure out what we're going to do, whether it's going to be Chad Wheeler, whether it's going to be Bobby Hart to come in and try to fight for that position, or if they move Eric Flowers to the right tackle position left tackle.
What I'm trying to say, David, would you take Fluker there? Because you think that he really opened up this ground game, him in the center, when they got in there, I think, first. They really made this ground game starting to go.
But at the same time, he also gave up pressures and hits on the quarterback in the passing game in the same time where he gave up the ground game. So that's a big question. For me personally, I would sign him and I'd have him back.
Right, and I would think once that ground game going, the play action with him would help him even better and stuff.
Absolutely.
Like that. Just if he gets in the way and we get it going. And Flowers is another one. He did pretty good. Like I heard them talking that he only gave up a couple of sacks since then. I know Charlie must be doing whatever, but he, you know what I mean? The guy is still, 21 or 22, he's just out of diapers.
Yeah, he's 23 years old, and he's got a lot of football left to be played and still a lot to learn. So, he has improved. He still has technique issues that he needs to work on in regards to fundamentals and tying hands and feet together and punching, rerouting, and redirecting a defensive end and keeping your head and shoulders back at the same time. But overall, I would see him.
And he said he's our best all-around lineman that could play anywhere. So
he's the versatile one.
I say we sign him, right?
Absolutely, Joe. Thanks for the call. Yeah. We appreciate it. But, but he wants to bring back all the guys that were here this year. Don't you have to make a change?
Yes.
Isn't that what everyone complained about from 2 years ago, that they just brought back the same five?
Exactly, and that's the thing where it doesn't – the only figure, if you look at the free agent tackles after the season that are going to be on the market, the only one that would be available was Nate Solder. I mean, he's the only legitimate one that would come in and could play left tackle.
Correct.
And then when you go to the draft, the top draft pick at tackle is Matt McGlinchey out of Notre Dame.
And you have Connor Williams from Texas.
And you have Connor Williams, but he's a right tackle. He's a monster. So you see him playing more right than you see him playing left. Those are the decisions that they're going to have to make. And then from that point on, what other veterans who may not be the high-money guys are going to be available to bring in to compete at the different guard positions, barring you sign Justin Pugh or however you go about it, so that there is constant competition among this group so that the five best linemen are out on the field when they open up week one next year.
The way I see Fluker, Dave, is it depends on who the Giants bring in as their head coach
and
offensive
system,
coordinator,
without a doubt,
and how they decide to play. If you're going to play in a system where you have to pass the ball 40 times, you can't have DJ Fluker start for you.
He's not your guy.
But if you want to play like the Cowboys try and play, and just
ground and pound, get yourself in third and manageables, run play action, that fits his game perfectly.
Then it works.
Yeah, then it works.
Then it works. So I think it depends what you want to do, and that'll determine whether or not Fluker's your guy. Who are you going to put a right tackle? And then it all depends, too, on what the market for Pugh is. Remember, he's an unrestricted free agent. He can do whatever he wants. And as you well know, Dave, there is a paucity of offensive linemen in the National Football League. There are not a lot of good offensive linemen out there. He will, even with the injuries this year, he will be in high demand. So the Giants will have to make a decision on how and where they value him as a player.
Yeah, he will be in high demand. But at the same time, in that high demand, I'm sure – within his contract and his realm, there are going to be provisions based upon games played and performance.
Sure.
Because that's the one thing. Throughout Justin's career, he's been injury-prone, and each season he's missed games.
Absolutely. 201-939-4513. Folks, you always call about the offensive line. Who better to talk to than David Deal? Give us a ring again, 201-939-4513. Len in Columbia, Maryland, is up next. Hi, Len.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's up, buddy?
Well, got a game on Sunday. That's the good news. Boy, I can't wait for the season to be over, though. But, hey.
I never thought I heard you say that.
I'm going to watch every play. I figure, David, I figure we got like 200 offensive plays left in the season, and I'm going to watch every one of them.
Good for
you. Nothing like Giants football, but, wow, it's been a tough season.
Just so you know, Len, you just said about 200 plays left on the season. That's 60 snaps offensively a game.
Yeah.
You better hope that the offense can do that when they're playing up against these good defenses.
Yeah. There you go. Actually, I had it at about 65 snaps a game to get us to 195. But, I was so optimistic. I don't think there was anybody in the offseason that told you guys more than I thought we'd be playing in late January. And it's obviously not going to turn out that way. But,
no.
Get back to putting together a plan. And, I have reasons to get through Maine probably next summer. And, John, you're going to have to help me. I want to meet Charlie.
Do you really?
I'd even go through Portland to get to where I got to go in Maine, just so I'd have an opportunity to sit down and chat with Charlie.
Len, do me a favor, reach out to me, and I'll reach out to Charlie, and I will make that connection happen. Okay?
Yeah, love connection.
That'd be fun. That would be fun. That would be fun.
Just bring your straight
David,
jacket, okay?
Two things. Offensive line. I want to talk about two things, David. Offensive line, and then I want to talk about the head coaching vacancy. And some of the criteria that you guys might think is important
sure.
for somebody to hold to get that job. David, I want to move on this offensive line, particularly from the center to the outside on the right. Now, maybe there's players on the roster who are playing on the left side who can play on the right side. Maybe that's where Flowers belongs. I don't know. We'll leave that up to the coaches. But I think he's probably one of the top five. But I keep thinking about how tough it is for this team against 3-4 defenses, and I just keep thinking we need an anchor at the center of that line. Brett Jones has done a nice job for us. He's worked hard. I give him all the credit in the world, but I think we just have to move on. I think we got to get better at that center
spot. I disagree completely with you, Len.
You agree, David?
I disagree in that regard to getting rid of Brett Jones.
Why is that, Dave?
He has been the bright spot of the offensive line since stepping into there. And I'm not saying that, and believe me, people want to look at his size. Oh, he has played the best out of any of the offensive linemen this season in the O-line, and he's played the least amount of most of the guys in the group. So to say that he's one of the guys that you get rid of, a guy who stepped into a tough position and took over the leadership role right away, I don't agree with you on that one.
Well, okay. We disagree on that one.
NFL offensive linemen.
How badly we play – I shouldn't say badly, but – I mean, we're not very good against 3-4 defenses, Dave. Is that the guards? Is that the tackles? I mean, I think it's the guy in the middle.
I think it's.
But in any event, and with regard to Fluker.
Len, I love the call, but you're debating offensive line with a guy who played offensive line for 20 years.
Yeah, I know I am. I know I am, David.
I'm just throwing that out there, man.
Obviously, respect your opinion.
When you're playing up against the 3-4,
see it. Can we move to Fluker for a second?
Hold on. I just want to say this. When you play up against a 3-4, the most critical movement is on the defensive end, not on the nose tackle. Because that's what separates and gets the guards up to the second level, and it's what widens the defense to play gaps.
Okay. David,
If you get a stalemate at the center position, you can live with it.
And I think I've talked to you before about this before. I always thought was the key was getting the nose tackle blocked.
If you can get – even if you get a stalemate with the nose tackle, it's a win. Because what that does, it allows your guards and your tackles to work up to the second level. So if you look, when centers reach nose tackles in a 3-4, it's not like they're getting them 2 yards off of the ball. They're just staying in front of them and keeping in place. So it's giving a running back a front side read or a second to cut back on the backside.
Okay. How did Fluker become the starting right guard?
Injury.
Can you give me a little history lesson on that? I mean, this year.
Well,
there was an injury at left guard with Pugh. They moved Pugh out to right tackle. They moved Jerry from right guard to left guard, and then they put Fluker in at right guard.
Yep.
Why didn't they just put Fluker at left guard?
Because usually left guard, you want someone with a little bit more mobility and pass pro ability that Fluker does not have.
And
there
Fluker
you go.
Is
there
too,
you go.
And that way Fluker is
go.
Not to the blinds.
I think Fluker is a backup right guard.
And that's where what I said, when you move him to the right side, the reason why it's to the right side is because that's not the blind side of the quarterback where the strip sack fumbles come up into play. So I think that he should be on this roster, but I wouldn't give him a starting spot. I would make him earn it and compete with another veteran.
What's your question on the head coach, Len?
Head coach question. How important do you think – well, I agreed with you in your conversation with Charlie. I think it's got to be – I mean, the person has to have experience as a coordinator before. I mean, it's just that way. But how important do you think NFC East experience is on somebody's resume, guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's an important thing to know the history and to have coached maybe somewhat into it. But at the same time, I think anybody who's a coach in the NFL or studied the NFL, you're watching and you know exactly what's taking place in the NFC East anyways. So to say that he had to be a coordinator or have that type of resume in the NFC East, I wouldn't say that. But the fact that if he coached and has been a part of the NFC East and knows
and
the rivalries and knows the history and tradition about it, I think that's an important thing.
Yeah, okay. Hey, guys, thanks. Let's go.
You got it, Len.
Let's win a game on Sunday.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Len. By the way, that was one of the most in-depth informational things about the offensive line that I've ever heard. Like, I didn't know that that the tackles are the most important thing in the 3-4 in the run game. I had no idea.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, for the center, a lot of times what we used to say, like a nudge or an A, where basically the guard is, I mean, you're not looking to get huge movement on the center and the nose. Basically, you're just trying to put him back onto the center to keep the lanes clean. So a nudge is almost – you're taking one step. You're just tapping the nose tackle, and you're working up to the second level just so he can secure him. But you're not really seeing offensive linemen at the center position going up against 3-4s really moving and dominating nose tackles. You're seeing them cover them up, keep their feet moving so that the back has a two-way go off of it, and then you work your guard and your tackle to the second level. But in any of those plays, in those zone plays, most crucial block is the play side tackle moving that play side defensive end to stretch and widen that 3-4 defense in that double bubble.
Because the whole point in the 3-4 defense, and correct me if I'm wrong, from the defensive perspective, they want those defensive linemen to occupy as many offensive linemen as possible.
Two gap is what it's called.
Exactly,
because
you got big, then they control two players there, and that will allow your linebackers to flow to the football.
And run over the top and play however they want to play.
It's important for your offensive tackles then to control the 3-4 DNs and your center to control the nose tackle to give your guards an ability to release to the linebacker.
Exactly.
Level.
Okay. And then if that play runs backside or it goes outside, that front side linebacker, in order to make the play, is going to have to run over the top and run the hump to try making a play. And at that point, the running back could put his foot in the ground and hit it back right inside.
And obviously the linebackers, if you're a good guard, once you get your hands on the linebacker,
it's over.
They're not going to release on you.
You can, and number one, they're not going to release on you. Number two, if you get on them, that's an arm tackle that a linebacker has to make with a guard on top of him as well.
Which is probably not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
There you go, folks. There you go. 201-939-4513. Capriola is in New Jersey. What's up, Capriola?
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
How you doing?
How's it going?
I'm doing well. Listen, I just got one thing to say. If the Giants let go of Eli Manning, I will not watch another football game again.
Well, Capriola, let me assuage your fears a little bit.
Yes.
John Mara spoke, I believe it was at the owner meetings yesterday,
when
Bob Lauber spoke to him, and he said if it's up to him, Eli Manning will be back as quarterback of the New York Giants next year. Obviously, Eli might have something to say about that. The new general manager, John Mara, also said would have input in that decision.
Of course.
As far as ownership is concerned, he wants Eli Manning back next year. So that should make you feel a little bit better heading into the holiday season.
It actually does. Listen, the guy, the kids brought us in 2 Super Bowl rings. He got 2 Super Bowl MVPs, and you be to tell me the best you can do is an Eric Flowers? I mean, no offense, but come on. You know what I'm saying? Like, get the kid a line. get him some protection. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Absolutely. We
Thank
agree
you,
with you.
Appreciate it.
I agree with you 100% in that regard, and that is a big, big question moving forward here, because this is going to be a decision made by the general manager, the head coach, and Eli Manning when they all sit down.
And ownership.
After, and obviously, like you said, with John Mara. But after this season, when they all sit down and come up with the decision of what direction and the future of this organization is going in.
And, Dave, there are so many layers to the decision.
Oh, there's so
it's
much
how
to
do
it.
You feel about Davis Webb? What does Eli want to do? Who comes out in the draft this year? What do you think
you
of the players
exactly.
that do come out? So there are so many layers here, folks, that if I had to – I mean, I can't even predict right now whether Eli Manning is going to be here next year. I think it's a flip of a coin. Who knows? We just don't have enough information now.
Today, this morning, I was doing an event, and one of the guys was like, hey, give me an insight. Who's going to be the head coach? They go – we got to get a general manager first before I'm giving you an insight on who the head coach is going to be.
It's very difficult.
Yeah.
Let's go to Ben in Manalapan. He's up next. What's up, Ben?
Hi. I want to talk about the second pick in the draft. I know that Dottino keeps saying to trade the pick, but I'm looking at the teams in the league, and out of the 31 teams, 20 don't need a quarterback. The other nine are maybes, and the only one positive I can come up with is Buffalo. What do you think about that?
Yeah, you know what? I actually had this chat with somebody off the air the other day, Ben, and I think it's interesting. The teams that are really close to that top pick other than Denver really don't have that many quarterback needs. You know, the 49ers don't need a quarterback. The Browns will be picking first, obviously. And it gets very difficult to trade up from like 15 to 2. That gets
tricky.
Very pricey. It gets hard. It's a hard thing to do. And here's the other thing, Ben, and you know, I know Paul is a huge Davis Webb fan, and we're going to have a show in the offseason when me and him have a debate about that. He's convinced that Davis Webb is the next franchise quarterback. My position is that we don't know enough yet to make that
We
decision.
Don't know that sample size.
Absolutely. You know, we know he has the tools, but there are plenty. And this is a great person to ask, Ben, and I will make sure you finish your call. Just stand by as I ask Dave this question for my edification. How many quarterbacks and players have you come along around that have all the tools in the world? They're a good guy. They're smart. They can play. They have all the physical gifts. But then all of a sudden, when guys are flying around,
and
it just gets too fast for them, and you can't. What you do in practice, you can't do when there's somebody, frankly, trying to put you 5 feet under on every play. Doesn't it make a difference going from practice to going into live action on the field against defenses that are trying to murder you?
100%. Because figure at this time where Davis Webb is, I mean, he's running the Philadelphia Eagles offense. So when you're running this, you're getting off of a card, you're going up against the first string defense. You know, in the game plan and the way that they're doing it, you know, the coaching staff, even though you're running the Philadelphia Eagles stuff, they're giving you more to work with. They're giving you a bigger sample size, and they're putting more on your plate as a quarterback to run and direct things. And you could see in practice the way the players are developing based upon the way that they perform up against the starting defense. But to sit here and to turn it on to going just from practice without really getting a good feet sunk in with doing preseason and getting experience during the season, to go out there and to say that you're going to take those things from the practice squad team and to do it underneath the lights, it's just as difficult to do it from college to come into the pros to do it underneath the lights. Because number one, not only are you digesting everything that you're putting in offensively and all the things that you have to direct, now you're helping, and the offensive line is helping you to direct the protections. Now you're stemming. Now people are all over. Now they're blitzing at you. Now they're giving you different looks. Now they're starting to disguise. How are you going to be able to adapt to that?
And, by the way, you're wearing a red jersey in practice, but nobody can hit you.
And nobody can hit you. How are you going to be able to adjust to that and move it to the next level without really getting that experience? It's tough.
So, Ben, here's what I would say as to your question to the second pick. And, Dave, I want to get your opinion on this, too. If your scouting staff evaluates all the quarterbacks and they come to the decision that, look, we think player X is a franchise quarterback, that's your next Eli Manning, and he's sitting there at number two, Dave, I don't know how you can say no to that.
No, you can't.
And if that player's not there, then you explore your other options.
Exactly, because those players that have that ability, that can do it, are a dime a dozen, because we've seen quarterbacks come in and come out of the NFL throughout the years that you can have prolific college numbers. You can play well. But when you get to the NFL and you're playing up against grown men and you're on a different schedule and you're not going to class and that you're practicing football day in and day out, and now you're facing defenses that are disguising things and are attacking exactly your weaknesses with the ability and the personnel to do it. Unlike college, there's times where, you know, I've always said as an offensive lineman in college, if you're a split second late on something in regards to a protection or a blitz pickup, you could still get by. If you're a split second late in the NFL and you have to think and you're not reacting, you better close your eyes, because something good is not going to come out of it. And there is no way to come back from it. And I said, look out, Eli, because there is no way to come back from it because of how good of athletes everybody is and how precise everything is in regards to blitzing and the way the defenses are played.
All right, Ben, what's your second point, dude? Sorry about that. We got on a bit of a tangent.
No,
for
it's
you.
Good, though.
That's okay. So since I'm a big Eli fan, I don't think I want a quarterback. So if there are no offensive linemen that are worth taking with the second pick in the draft, I'm thinking maybe a linebacker or a pass rusher.
Well, I think your pass rusher would be Bradley Chubb, who is basically considered the best defensive end in the draft. He's not considered to be as good as the guy the Browns drafted last year. But he is the best pass rusher in the draft class. You can never go wrong with picking a defensive end that can rush the passer. I'm fine with that. I'm not a guy that would pick a running back in the top five myself. I think you can get good running backs later in the draft. And generally, I hate to tell you, again, we don't know. Maybe they are going to go to 3-4 next year. Who knows what the defensive coordinator is going to
be. Exactly.
But normally you don't see 4-3 linebackers go in the top fives of these drafts either.
No. You usually see them going, you know, anywhere from 9 to 10 to the teens based upon the ability of what they're doing. But for me, I mean, we can continue to talk about this. You know, if you're going to take a quarterback at that pick, you better be 100% confident that he can take over the franchise and he's going to be that guy.
Thank you,
otherwise,
Ben,
there's no point in taking that pick. But the other positions we've talked about, offensive line, we could talk about linebackers. We could talk about getting another defensive tackle into the mix. We could talk about getting another safety to go opposite of Landon Collins.
How about a cornerback?
Another corner that you can use not only to play there but to play the slot nickel. There's a lot of things that you can do with that first pick.
And look, Dave and I aren't saying, folks, that you have to pick a quarterback.
No, not at all.
If the right guy is there, you pick him.
You have to.
Because the last thing you want to do is be one of these teams from the 2011 draft. Dave, as you well know, the 2011 draft was one of the best drafts in NFL history, okay? Here are the guys picked in the top 15. I went through it the other day. I'll be real quick. Von Miller, A.J. Green, Marcel Darius, Patrick Peterson, Julio Jones, Tyron Smith, J.J. Watt, Nick Fairley, Robert Quinn, Mike Pouncey. Great names.
Yeah.
Let me tell you some names that don't belong that got picked in the top 15, okay? How about number 8, Jake Locker, who got picked one pick ahead of Tyron Smith.
He gone.
How about number 10, Blaine Gabbert, who was picked one pick ahead of J.J. Watt.
And is still just trying to prove he deserves to be a quarterback in the NFL.
And then Christian Ponder at 12, who got picked one pick or four picks before Ryan Kerrigan got selected by the Redskins. So the worst thing you can do is force a quarterback, but if you believe in one, it's hard to pass up on.
And him. The other quarterback that I've watched that not a lot of people are talking about, I watched his game film. I prepared for a Colorado State game that I called a college game. Josh Allen out of Wyoming is a stud.
No, he has every tool you could imagine.
He is a stud. And if you can do something to where you can manipulate your picks and you can get more picks and you see him sitting there in the 10 to 12, 13 range.
But you wouldn't pick him at 2, right?
I would not pick him at 2, no.
Too raw, right?
Too raw. Fundamentals and certain things and throwing the football. But his ability to use his legs, command attention, he's put that Wyoming team on his back in games and in the fourth quarter, has won him himself. So he may be a little bit of a project, but I think he could be a hell of a player in the NFL.
And if you keep Eli Manning around, a good guy to mentor
to groom him.
And by the way, compete with Davis Webb.
Yep.
Just because you draft a quarterback, by the way, doesn't mean you're throwing Davis Webb in the trash can here either.
No.
There's going to be a competition. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with having two good quarterbacks. Because you know what? If both guys are really good, you trade one and you get something really good back for them. That's
exactly.
Not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing to have on your roster.
All right, we got 3 calls. We got 8 minutes. Let's get everybody in. Richie in Long Island is up next. Hi, Richie.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Doing well, Richie. What's up?
What's up, Richie?
All right. I'm just wanted to talk about a little bit about Eli Apple. I think Landon Collins spoke yesterday, and I'm glad, like somebody said it. He said, I think one of the lines was, we need him to want to be here when he was talking. And just, I know he's got, like, personal issues going on, and it must be tough, but just the lack of, I don't know, it just seems like he doesn't want to be there or, you know, going through hard times. It's just... something about it, just retweeting things. It's not a good look. I don't want him to be a draft bust, but it's hard. You know, when I'm just glad Landon Collins said something to that effect.
I am too, and that's and going along with that, it's a privilege to be in the NFL. It's a privilege to be in the locker room.
Yeah, Richie,
it's not right.
I don't want to give you the quote real quick. This was Landon on Eli Apple, just so the fans hear it. We have to go to practice with him, and we need him to be here. We need him to want to be here and not fighting against us or fighting against the coaches, because he's fighting against the coaches or the organization or whatever. He's fighting against in his head. We don't need him fighting us because that causes conflict. And then there was a follow-up. Was this recently? Yeah, it's been throughout the season. Was the sit-down this week, and referencing a sit-down he had with him? It's been throughout the season multiple times. So this is something that the whole cornerback group and defensive back group has been working on Eli Apple with.
Yeah, very
that's
important.
Just the fact of him, you know, saying that, you know, because I don't think he's probably the first one to actually, you know, say something to that effect, but just makes him, you know, an even better player in my book.
That's what leaders do.
He's a future captain.
Absolutely. That's what leaders do. When something needs to be said, and when it's coming to players in the locker room and what should be done and what should be addressed, leaders step up and take on that role just like Landon Collins did.
Thank you, Richie. Appreciate the call, my friend. I want to remember the first part of that quote, by the way, because I thought it was even better. This was the first part of it. Yeah, I had a sit-down with him in response to a question, obviously. A couple of us has had a sit-down with him, and we just said, man, regardless of the situation, we got your back. You're our brother. So they're trying to basically get him. It sounds like they're trying to get him to buy back in.
Yes.
It seems like he bought out at some point.
Yeah,
that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, 100% that's what it sounds like.
And hopefully he'll get back on the field this week and show something these last 3 weeks against three, you know, pretty good football teams, to be quite honest with you. 201-939-4513. Let's go back to the phones and go to Mike up in Boston. Hi, Mike.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. It's good to talk to both of you.
Thanks for calling in, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. Hey, I know we're short on time.
No, you're okay.
Just, and I missed half the show, so I'll probably be listening to it on the podcast, so I hope I'm not repeating anything.
No worries.
So we were talking, I heard you mentioning about the draft, and I wanted to kind of throw out Saquon Barkley, if it hasn't been brought up already, as a running back. And, okay. And, you know, I was watching some tape on him from Penn State.
He's really good.
He's a 230-pound back, and when he doesn't make guys miss, he jumps over them.
He does.
And, you know, just comparing, just thinking about guys like Le'Veon Bell, Zeke, and so forth, I would probably take this guy over them. And I was just wondering, with that number two spot, seems like this draft class doesn't look very deep past the top 10 the way last year's did, where there was a lot of depth all, you know, through the first two rounds. I don't know. You know, if we're all in on Eli, and it sounds like John Mara is at this point, which I'm thrilled to hear, you know, I don't know what your thoughts are. If we were to really give him that cast, you know, for those last few years of his career, a great running back, and build up that offensive line and go all in on him, I wonder what that could do for the team, you know, knowing that that support is there from, you know, whoever the GM turns out to be, the ownership and so forth, knowing that everyone's all in on Eli.
Go ahead, Dave.
That's great. I mean, it's a great point. I mean, to get a running back in here, you think about the beginning of the season, Paul Perkins was number one, and then injuries and just lack of getting the job done forced more to Orleans Darkwell, who I love as a running back, but he's not a premier back. He's a guy that comes in, gets those tough yards that you need, but we know that he's not a dual threat where he's going to have those sure hands to catch out of the backfield. I think Wayne Gallman's shown capability, but the problem is when he runs with his pads too high, ball security is job security. When you put the ball on the ground, that's a tough position to be in. And in regards to Barkley, believe me, he's got that upper echelon speed. He can hit the hole. He's the one that can catch out of the backfield, make people miss. And the more a three-down player. And the more that you hear draft prospect and more that you hear film and research upon him, which I haven't gotten into the running backs yet.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate
but
the
when
call.
You have – you're hearing of a more complete back than they thought of Leonard Fournette and Todd Gurley.
Yeah, he's on the same level as an Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I have no problem, Dave, drafting a running back when your team is set up to utilize him. And I think when the Cowboys drafted Elliott, they already had their
offensive line
in place. And if the Giants had the offensive line in place,
then
like
you could take that pick.
I'd be fine with it, because then you're transforming the entire way your offense works. And I think it makes sense. If you put Barkley behind a line that's not consistent,
he's not going to get the production that he needs, and he's not going to have the ability.
He's not going to look like Saquon Barkley.
Exactly. And that is a big discussion that in regards to the draft, what are they going to do to fix the offensive line through free agency before they go out and make this pick?
And they're going to know, obviously,
they will know 100% by the time that they get there.
And obviously, if you're picking Barkley in the first round, remember, you got the running back out of LSU who's a really good player.
Yep.
A lot of people like the kid out of Stanford. I'm not sure if he's a first and second down player.
No, and I'm just worried about his ability to stay healthy in the Northeast.
I agree with that, too. All right, final call of the show, Dave, is Matt on Long Island. He will be our cleanup hitter. What's up, Matt?
Hey, what's up, guys? How are you?
Doing great,
man.
What's going on?
All right, I just jumped in. The last guy that called wasn't even going to bring up Barkley, but since I'm a USC fan and I watched Penn State play USC last year, man, all you got to do is go back and watch that game.
Oh, yeah.
He's good.
I watched it. He's good. There's
man.
No denying that. But what we were just saying, to go out and make that pick, let's say it's in the top three or four, you better have an offensive line in front of him in order to take a running back in that group.
And you better be ready to build your offense around that player.
Yep.
I agree 1,000%. I'm actually hoping we get Darno because I'm a quarterback guy. And
you're a USC fan.
You're a USC guy. There it is, man.
I understand the guy calling about Barkley because that man was stud.
Yeah.
My question, the real reason I was calling is I feel like, maybe you guys could tell me, am I the only Giant fan that doesn't want to see them win any of these games, the final three games?
No, you're not. Honestly, you're not.
No.
And if you want to look at it from a cold, logical perspective, it makes perfect sense.
It does.
But if you're a player, or if you're a coach, or if you're anyone in the building who makes their living playing football,
losing.
You can't look at it that way.
I lose the checkers to my daughter, and it drives me crazy. I'm not joking. And that's the competitive nature of who I am as a person and as I was as a player. But if you are a fan, realistically, looking at the broader scope of things, as much as it hurts me to say it, I could understand where a fan said, season isn't going where it's going. We're already playing players to see who they are, to see if they'll be a part of the team, whether it's through injury or now just because it's the last three games. We're going to see more players out there, whether it's on special teams, playing different roles in offense or defense, to see if they deserve to be on the Giants and be in the NFL. But having said that, at the overall long-term overturning and building towards the future, it's completely realistic for fans to say that.
Sure. The only reason I bring this up, maybe I'm wrong, but maybe you guys could check it. I think we missed Emmitt Smith by one pick.
I would have to go back pick. And look at that.
And,
I'm not
and
sure.
I think the Jets missed Big Ben by one pick.
Let me look.
And I know how much you lose in a draft to move up. When we traded to get Eli, we had to give up a first-round pick for the next year and something else, I believe,
and
maybe a third-round pick.
And I think
it's just –
the thing that I was going to say is,
thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. And the thing that you really have to think about, I know that everybody keeps sitting here saying, we need to take the quarterback. Cleveland is going to take a quarterback at number one. They're going to do it. And in order to move them out of that spot, they're going to be looking for more numbers. They're going to be looking for more trades.
They hire John Dorsey to find their quarterback.
Exactly.
And he is going to pick that quarterback
at one. He is going to pick that quarterback
at one. Which
is
why it's so important that both Rosen and Darnold both declare.
Exactly.
Which we don't know for sure if
that's going
to happen.
We don't know for sure. And nor have either one of them. We continue to hear a source close to the situation. We have not heard either one of them say and declare, I'm going to the NFL. And until that happens, there's going to continue to be speculation. Do I believe that if you are a number one draft pick, that you can leave your junior year and be that number one guy, regardless of whether you don't want to play for the Cleveland Browns or not? You're going. You're going. You have to declare. There's no opportunity, because we've seen in the past, look at Matt Barkley. He could have left and he would have been a top 10 draft pick. He stayed. Everything got dismantled. And where do we see him?
I have three quick fire questions
Give
for
them
you.
To me.
Better chance Darnold or Rosen doesn't come out?
I would say better chance that Darnold doesn't come out.
I agree. If both come out, which quarterback do you like better?
I like Rosen better. I know he's a little bit more raw, and I know that they both have things that they need to work on, and he had his shoulder surgery, but for me, I would go with Rosen.
More traditional pocket passer. I think Darnold might have a little bit more upside, but I think Rosen is more ready. I agree. Number three, have you ever lost anything on purpose to your daughter?
Have I ever lost?
Yeah, like checkers are a game on purpose.
I used to. Not anymore. Now that she's 10 and she's going to be 11, I don't do it as much. But, yes, I used to lose on purpose.
That's
it
okay,
used
though.
To kill me.
When they're really young, it's
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, when they're young. But now, no. Now we play and we do things. And, you know, just like in regards to anything, you as a child need to realize what it means to lose and want that hunger to come back and fight and feel the price and the taste of victory. And I think that's something that – you know, parents these days, participation awards, all that stuff. I'm not a part of any of that stuff. I learned early when I'm the youngest of three boys that you're not going to win every single time. But it's how you respond and are you going to work hard and learn from that loss.
It's about earning your
success.
That's
right. Absolutely.
Not being given your success.
Because that's never going to be given to you in life.
Absolutely. Little parenting 101 with David Deal and John Schmelke on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Fun show, my man.
Absolutely, Schmelke.
He's David Deal. I'm John Schmelke. Thanks for joining us tomorrow. It's Feagles and Meadow previewing Giants and Eagles with you. We'll see you then. Have a great day, everybody.